Welcome back, everyone. We're going to do a deep dive today into something, well, it's kind of personal, you know, but also a really big global issue. All the stuff that affects whether people succeed at having kids.
Yeah.
We've got excerpts from two research articles, pretty academic stuff, and a lot is about infertility, especially in developing countries. They have a lot of trouble with that. And the other one is about it's about genes, you know, and like how your genes can actually influence how many kids you're likely to have.
It might seem like those are two totally different topics, but they're connected in an interesting way.
Okay, how so?
Because they both show how much, like, biology and social stuff and economics all play a part in, like, you know, how reproduction goes for people.
Wow, that's pretty complex, huh?
It is.
So we're gonna like dig deep into these papers.
Yeah.
And we're gonna find some really surprising things, I think. Stuff that's relevant to everyone, not just the scientists.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm ready to dive in if you are.
Okay, great. Let's get started. the first article, the one on infertility, it starts with a statistic that, well, it kind of blew me away. Almost 200 million people around the world.
Wow.
Struggling with infertility. Can you imagine? And the rates are way higher in countries with, you know, low incomes and middle incomes.
Yeah. It shows just how unequal access to healthcare is, you know, especially reproductive healthcare. Around the world, it's not the same everywhere. And it creates this weird situation. In some places, you have high infertility rates, but also high birth rates.
Oh, wow.
At the same time, yeah.
They actually called it barrenness amid plenty. Which, I don't know, I thought that was such a powerful way to put it.
It is.
You know, you could have too many people and, like, not enough people at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Because people can't have the families they want. And I was really struck by the article's description of, you know, the social stuff and the economics of infertility in these places where they don't have a lot of resources. It's really hard, especially on women.
Yeah. In so many cultures, a woman's worth is, unfortunately, connected to whether she can have kids. So you can imagine how much stigma there is.
Right.
Isolation and even violence against women who can't have children in those societies.
That is so sad and wrong. The article also said, you know, not having children can really hurt a woman's financial security.
Right.
Especially in places where, you know, kids are how you make sure you're taken care of when you're old.
Yep. They're like your social security.
Right. It's like, it's this terrible cycle, you know, makes it hard to get healthcare in the first place. But there are solutions out there. The article talks about these really promising IVF techniques that are, well, they're simpler and they're cheaper. They use less medication. They can do the lab work in a mobile unit, you know, so it's very portable.
Wow.
So if it works and it's affordable, why isn't it everywhere? Like, what's the problem?
That is the big question, isn't it? It seems like maybe people just don't know about these solutions. And there's not enough support from, you know, governments, international organizations, even the fertility industry itself.
Wait, really? Why would the fertility industry?
Yeah, you'd think they'd be all for it. But it might be that they're reluctant to, you know, embrace something that's cheaper, makes less money. But something needs to change.
Yeah.
So more people can have access to these treatments. It's really life-changing for people.
You know, it's like we're so focused on having the best, newest technology that
right.
we forget about the simple things
right.
that could help millions of people. Like, we don't need something fancy. We need something that works.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so that was infertility and all the stuff around it, especially in countries with limited resources. Now, let's switch gears a bit to the other article, the one about how genes affect how many kids you have. This study was huge. Over 785,000 people.
Wow.
All of European descent.
Mm.
And they were looking for any connections between genes and how many kids someone has. They call it NEB.
Right, NEB. Number of children ever born. And they found, are you ready for this, 43 different genetic locations.
Wow.
That are associated with NEB.
43. So it's not just one gene.
No, no, no. It's a whole bunch of them. And they're all involved in different things, like when you start puberty, how your hormones work, endometriosis, menopause. It's really complex. But I guess when you think about it,
yeah.
It makes sense, right? It's not simple.
No, not at all. So tell me about some of these genes. Like, what do they do?
Okay, so one example is this variant of a gene called RhJAP27.
RhJAP27. Got it.
People with this variant, they tend to have more kids,
okay,
but they go through menopause earlier.
Oh, really? So they have more kids, but less time to have them.
Yeah, it's a trade-off.
That really throws a wrench in the whole, you know, family planning thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And it shows how much our genes can affect our lives
right.
in ways we don't even realize.
It's not just about whether you can have kids or not.
Right, exactly. And it's not like one gene, one outcome. These genes interact.
Right.
And of course, they're also influenced by, you know, environmental factors.
Right, of course. So genes aren't everything. There's more of the story.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The article makes that clear. Like, what about your education, your economic situation, whether you have access to birth control? All those things have a huge impact on, you know, how many kids people choose to have.
Makes sense. So genes might, like, titch you in a certain direction.
Right. A predisposition.
But you still have the final say.
Yeah, you have the free will. And then the researchers found this really cool thing about a group of genes.
Oh, tell me.
It's called the F-AIDS locus. And this is where natural selection comes in.
Natural selection. Okay, so survival of the fittest, but like for making babies.
Exactly. Some gene variants, they might help you have more kids so they get passed down more. That's the idea. So this F-AIDS locus, two genes, FADS1 and FADS2.
Okay.
And they're both involved in how your body processes fatty acids.
Like from the food we eat.
Exactly. And here's the crazy part. These genes have been under selection pressure.
Meaning what?
It means they've been important for survival and reproduction
okay.
for thousands of years. And they still are.
Wait a minute. Are you saying what people ate thousands of years ago
yeah.
is still affecting how many kids people have today?
That's what the research suggests. Yeah, it's pretty wild, huh? It shows you how powerful our genes are, how much they connect us to the past.
That is wild. So this gene, it helped our ancestors survive because they could eat different foods. And it also helped them have more babies.
That seems to be the case, yeah. And the selection pressure on this F8-ICE locus, it's still happening. Over time, this advantageous allele, it's become more common.
An allele, so that's like a version of a gene.
Right, a specific version. And it's not just about how your body handles fat. The F8-ICE locus, it also affects your levels of sex hormones. So it could be directly influencing fertility, too.
Wow. Okay, so we've got this ancient gene. It's still changing because of natural selection, and it connects what we eat to our ability to have kids. This is blowing my mind.
It's pretty amazing stuff, yeah. And the F-ANTH locus isn't the only one. They found other genes, too, like CADM2 and ESR1. And they show clients of something called balancing selection, which means, well, different versions of these genes stick around in the population.
Why would that happen?
Because they might be good in some situations, but bad in others. Like, evolution is always trying to find a balance.
Right, right. So it's more complicated than just, like, one gene being good and one being bad.
Yeah, it's more nuanced than that. It depends on the environment, other genes. It's a whole web of interactions.
So it's like evolution is running this huge experiment with all these different factors.
Yeah.
And we're just starting to figure out how it all works.
Exactly. And we need to remember, too, that we're talking about real people here. With their own lives and experiences.
Oh, absolutely. It's easy to get caught up in the science.
Yeah.
But we can't forget that having kids is a very personal thing. There's so much more to it than just biology.
Right. It's about choices and emotions and the meaning people find in their lives. It's about what it means to be human.
And that's a whole other layer of complexity. I'm really interested to dig into that more.
Me too. It's something we need to pay more attention to, especially now when families are changing and society's expectations are changing too.
Right, right. I think our listeners are ready for that. Are you?
Let's do it.
You know, before we move on, I keep thinking about those genes, the ones with the balancing selection. You said CADM2 is linked to risk-taking.
Right.
How could that possibly affect how many kids someone has? It seems kind of backwards.
It's a really good question. And it shows how everything's connected, you know. It might seem weird, but taking risks can actually be good in some situations.
Really? Like what?
Well, imagine if there aren't many resources and everyone's competing.
Okay.
You got to take risks to get food or a place to live or even a mate.
That's true.
And if you succeed, well, you're more likely to have kids, right, and pass on those genes, the ones that make you a risk taker.
So it's like a gamble. You could win big, but you could also...
lose big. Yeah, that's why those genes are under balancing selection. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad.
Makes sense. So, like, if everything's stable and there's plenty of resources, taking risks might not be so smart.
Right, it might even hurt you. It's all about finding the right balance, depending on the environment.
It's amazing. You know, evolution is, like, constantly tweaking these traits.
Yeah.
Trying to get it just right so yeah. people can have the most kids. Like, nature is running this giant experiment.
That's a great way to put it. We're just starting to understand how it all works, especially when it comes to, you know, the social and emotional parts of having kids.
Right, right. Let's talk about that. What are some of the things that that science didn't always focus on, but that really matter to people?
Well, one big thing is all the pressure.
Oh, yeah.
And expectations around being a parent, especially for women.
Yeah, and a lot of cultures, it's like, you're not a real woman unless you're a mother.
Exactly. And if you choose not to have kids, or you can't, you face judgment. People might even reject you.
It's like there's this script everyone's supposed to follow.
Yeah.
And if you step off the path, you're a failure. I can't imagine how hard it is for people struggling with infertility.
It's incredibly difficult. It's like you have this deep desire
mm-hmm.
to have children, but you can't. And then everyone's telling you that having kids is the key to happiness.
It's like they're adding insult to injury. The article about developing countries, it really showed how bad those attitudes can be.
It's really sad. We need to stop blaming people.
Yeah.
And start understanding that there are lots of reasons why someone might not have children. We need more empathy, more support.
Totally agree. People should be able to talk about their struggles, get help without feeling ashamed.
Exactly. And it's not just about infertility. Even people who do have kids, parenthood can be really time.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
There's pressure to be the perfect parent. You got to juggle work and family. Money's always tight. It's a lot.
We make it look so glamorous, you know, like on social media.
Right. It's all filtered photos and happy smiles.
Yeah. And then everyone feels like they're failing if their life isn't perfect. We need to be more honest about what it's really like.
Absolutely. The good and the bad. We need to support each other
mm-hmm.
instead of pretending it's all easy.
It takes a village, right? And it also takes some bigger changes.
Systemic changes.
Yeah, like affordable childcare, paid parental leave, flexible work schedules.
Those things make a huge difference. They help families and they promote equality.
Yeah, it's not just about being nice. It's about creating a society that actually values families.
Right. It's about giving people choices. Not forcing them into a certain role.
And that brings us back to, you know, that big idea we've been talking about, how biology, society, and personal experience, they all connect.
Yeah. It's not about one thing or the other. It's about how they all work together.
So what are your final thoughts on all of this?
Well, what really strikes me is that we've learned so much about the biology of reproduction,
mm-hmm.
but we still don't know that much about the social and emotional side of things. We focus so much on the how of having kids.
Right.
That we forget about the why and what it means to people.
It's like we're so busy figuring out how to make babies that we forget about the human side of it.
Exactly. And that's where we need to go next, I think. We need to understand the whole picture, not just the biology. We need to think about the social, the emotional, the ethical parts of it all.
It's a much bigger conversation, and it's really important. I think that's a great place to wrap up this part of our discussion. It's amazing, isn't it? We've talked about so much in this deep dive, infertility, genetics. We even got into the like feelings and stuff
yeah.
that go along with having kids. It's a lot.
It shows you how complicated this whole topic is.
You're right. And we're still learning so much about it. But as we're wrapping up here,
mm-hmm.
I keep thinking about those millions of people struggling with infertility, especially, you know, in the poorer parts of the world. We've got to make sure they can get treatment, affordable treatment. And we need to change how people think about it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Get rid of that stigma.
Right.
Especially for women. It's so unfair. We need more empathy,
mm-hmm.
more understanding. People should be able to get help without feeling ashamed.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if someone has kids or not. That's their choice, and we should support them no matter what. Not judge them.
Exactly. And that support, it's not just about how individuals think. It's about bigger changes.
Yeah, like policies and stuff.
Right, things like affordable childcare.
Paid leave.
Yeah, and flexible work schedules. Those would make a huge difference for families and for equality.
It's about making it easier to raise a family.
Right, and giving people choices.
Mm-hmm.
Not making them feel trapped.
You know, it all comes back to that same idea. Biology, society, personal experience, it's all connected.
Yeah, it's all part of the same story.
So as we finish up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a thought. Reproductive success, it's not just about, you know, the science or how many kids you have. It's about choices and support
mm-hmm.
and finding meaning in your relationships, your family, however you define that.
It's a journey with ups and downs,
mm-hmm.
but it's something that deserves our attention and our compassion.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you learned something new and maybe even, you know, had a few moments where you thought, wow, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, that's what we hope for.
This is just the beginning of the conversation, though. Keep learning, keep asking questions,
mm-hmm.
and don't be afraid to challenge your own beliefs.
Right. Keep an open mind.
Until next time, keep diving deep.